أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. I begin with the, of course, always general comment that the idea of Mahdi is an idea believed by all Muslims. And only later in beginning with the 8th century, some scholars started to doubt the idea, who were inclined towards the Fatimids, because the Fatimids actually had claimed that Mahdi had already arrived, and they were descendants of Mahdi, alayhi salam. Therefore, some scholars who were inclined to them tried to create doubts about the idea of Mahdi. Before that, and even after that, because even after they have created doubt about it, no one has accepted it from them. It is a unanimous idea in all Muslim schools. Now, let me read a hadith which is mentioned by Sa'd al-Din al-Taftazani. He is an Ash'ari scholar in Kalam and a Shafi'i in Fiqh. He's a very famous scholar of the 8th century. He says that Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, rahmatullah alayhi, very good companion of the Prophet, peace be on him, reports that qala dhakara Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi bala'an yusibu hadhihi al-ummah. The Prophet mentioned a bala', a tribulation which would inflict this ummah. حتى لا يجد الرجل ملجأ يلجأ إليه من الظلم. In that bala and tribulation, no man would find anywhere to take refuge from oppression. فيبعث الله رجلا من أثرتي. Then a man from my progeny will be appointed or raised. فَيَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا كَمَا مُلِئَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجُورًا. He would fill the earth with justice and equity after it has been filled with injustice and inequity. Then he says, فَذَهَبَ الْعُلَمَاءُ. The ulama have said, this is, he's ulama, of course, ulama of Ahlul Sunnah, إِلَّا أَنَّهُ إِمَامٌ عَادِلٌ مِنْ وُلْدِ فَاطِمَةٌ radiyallahu anha. Our ulama say that he is a just imam from the progeny of Fatima radiyallahu anha. يخلقه الله حيث يشاء ويبعثه لنصرة دينه. Allah will create him whenever he wishes and will appoint him to support his faith. This is our idea. Taftazani says, وَزَعْمَتِ الشِّيَةُ الْإِمَامِيَّةِ. And the Shia have presumed أَنَّهُ مُحَمَّدُ بْنُ الْحَسَنِ الْعَسْكَرِ. This Mahdi, which is talked about by the Prophet, peace be on him, is actually already born, and his name is known. He is Muhammad, son of Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. اختفى عن الناس خوفا من الأعداء من الأعداء. He is, of course, hidden from people because of fear of the enemies. As his forefathers were all killed by the enemies, he would have been killed as well. For to prevent that, he has been actually ordered by Allah to go into hiding. Then he says, and the Shia say, there is no impossibility in his long life, like Nuh and Khizr, alayhi salam. Wa ankara dhalik Sa'ar al-Firaq. Of course, all other Muslim schools have denied this. لأنه ادعى أمر يستبعد جدا. Because this claim is very improbable, since in this ummah we haven't found people who have long lives like Nuh. Now, of course, the argument is not a strong argument. How do we know there are no people in this ummah who have no long lives like Nuh? Well, this the very clear example is Mahdi alayhi salam, who has long life, like Nuh alayhi salam. Anyhow, I mentioned this. I mentioned this to bring to your attention that this idea of Mahdi is a universally, alaykum salam, universally accepted idea among all Muslims. And people, whether Sunni or Shia, have been during the history waiting for his arrival. And the signs of his reappearance or appearance, if we are Shia, we say reappearance. If Sunni, we say his appearance. The signs of his appearance or reappearance are mentioned in many books of Sunnis and Shia. So it's a unanimous idea. Now, the point is that people in the past have written books, articles, treatises. They have tried to somehow say certain events which was going in their time are actually in conformity with the signs mentioned by the Prophet, peace be on him. And most of these signs, of course, are mentioned by the Prophet, peace be on him, and also some of it by Ayman alayhi salam. And therefore, they regarded the reappearance or appearance of Mahdi to be imminent, very close. We know at the time of Safavids, at the time of Qajar, before them, after them, people have written very strong arguments that our time is the time that Mahdi would come because of these signs that we are seeing, especially when there was wars in Syria. We know that in Syria there was always war. In Iraq there was always wars. And always people said that, well, this man who's fighting is Sufyani, is coming and fulfilling the promise. However, all of these predictions failed. And in some cases, those people who had deceived the rulers about these signs were executed, actually. They brought great damage. They made the rulers, the kings, believe that such and such is the sign of Mahdi, or such and such person is Mahdi, actually. And then they brought great damage. What we have to be concerned about are not signs when Mahdi will come. Is he coming or he is not coming? When he will be coming, inshallah, everyone will be informed about it. It's not an unknown sort of thing. It doesn't go in hiding. It doesn't go with sort of speculations. The signs of Mahdi alayhi salam are divided into two types: the general signs and the particular signs. The general signs are those signs which talk about different things happening in the world, including everyone. Like, for example, the universality of dhulm and injustice. This is what is mentioned in hadith. The universality of sinning. The universality of turning away from God. These are the general signs which are mentioned. The particular signs talk about certain things which would happen either before or during the reappearance of the Imam alayhi salam. Now, these signs, these particular signs, are also divided into two types. The signs which are definitive, they have to happen, and the signs which are conditional. So they call it al-alamatul mahtuma. They are mahtum. They definitely should happen. And al-alamatul mawqufa. They are conditional on certain circumstances. If certain situation is fulfilled, if certain circumstances are brought about, then those signs will appear. Otherwise, they don't. And many things which are mentioned in traditions, the majority of them which are mentioned in tradition, are the signs which are conditional. They may not happen at all. And we shouldn't actually waste time on going and studying those signs to see whether the reappearance of the Imam is close or is not close. it's not something which would benefit us at all. I mean, whether we know it's close or not close, if we are good servants of God, why should we be worried? If we are not good servants of God, then we have to rectify ourselves. Why should we wait for the Imam to come and rectify us? We have to rectify ourselves. Now, among those signs which are mahtum, which are categorical and would happen with certainty, we have this an-nida, the heavenly call, that before or when he reappears, and his reappearance is a gradual thing, it doesn't happen all at once. When he reappears, he announces it to a group of very close disciples. They know that he has reappeared, but he's still in hiding. Only those people who are close to him, among them, of course, from those 313, maybe not even all of those 313 initially know that he has reappeared. He would have certain people around him or call them to him, shows them the signs, and says that I am Mahdi and I am coming. However, he's still in hiding because there's great danger. He cannot show himself. These people then would go around the world and talk about Imam Mahdi's reappearance being imminent, or his khuruj, advent. We have zuhur, reappearance, and khuruj, advent. Khuruj has not yet happened. He hasn't come out. Just some people know that he has reappeared, and they go and give this good news to those who want to know about it. Well, these people are not believed in most parts. Sometimes they are rejected. However, what happens before this, as soon as the reappearance starts, is that nida, that sayha. That's why I say it's not something unknown. It's not something which people do not know, and they have to go and find out whether the Imam has reappeared or not, or this man claims that I'm Imam, or that man claims I am. No. This nida, this heavenly call, as-sayha, as soon as Imam reappears, everyone in the world hears a sound which comes from above. And the sound says, Mahdi has come. And everyone hears this in their own language. Everyone hears this in their own language. Mahdi is coming. Now you can, of course, imagine what will happen. The media start to talk. Well, scientifically, how can we talk about, analyze this? Maybe this is probably a conspiracy by Iranians, and they have done something in the air. Everyone is hearing this sound, and all these things, so not many people would believe. But those of you who believe would know that Mahdi is coming. Now that's for sure, Mahdi is coming. So this is one very, very important sign. It is a universal sign. However, a particular sign which is universally heard. And then the second categorical, definitive sign is the advent of Sufyani, which takes place 15 months before the reappearance of the Imam. It starts then, and then he gains power, huge power, not like Daesh or ISIS, no. Huge, these are just flies, gnats. Huge power, a power which no one can stand against. So this Sufyani gains power, conquers all the Levant, Iraq, Jordan, all these places, and then upon hearing the reappearance of the about reappearance of the Imam, would move towards Medina to find the Imam. And actually starts a massacre in Medina, which no one whose name is Mahdi or name of A'imma or anything can escape. Everyone will be killed there. Every Shia will be killed there. Then the Imam comes out to defend against Sufyani. And Sufyani, upon hearing the Imam coming, he's not there in Medina yet, it's his troops there. Imam would be able to drive away these people and stop them killing. They go back, and Sufyani would actually mobilize a huge army, which everyone would say that this is the end of whatever the idea of Mahdi is. It's a force that cannot be stopped. It moves from Syria towards Mecca and Medina because Imam is there. Still half known, half unknown. Moves there. And because no one can stop this army, everyone thinks that it's the end of it. The army is supported by Western powers, by big powers. They support them militarily, financially, even in terms of soldiers, they all come. Now, because no one can stop this army, there's only one way, and that's God to stop it, isn't it? And therefore, the third sign of the reappearance of the Imam is al-khasfu bil-bayda, swallowing in a place called Bayda near Medina. This army, which is moving due to an earthquake, would be swallowed by the earth. And that's the end of Sufyani. Not himself, of course, he will be killed later, but his army is gone. Then there's no one else. So these are the three. Nida, Sufyani, Khasf al-Bayda, three. There are two other definitive, five. There are only five definitive signs. Five different signs, not more than that. Anything we hear may not happen at all. Anything apart from this. There is one man called Yamani and one man called Khurasani. They also take some power at the same time when Sufyani takes power. So look at this hadith. It says that Al-Khurasani, خروج الثلاثة الخراساني والسفياني واليماني في سنة واحدة في شهر واحد في يوم واحد وليس فيها راية بأحدى من راية اليماني يهدي إلى الحق. This happens before the reappearance of the Imam. The advent of three people, Khurasani, Sufyani, and Yamani. They happen in the first year, in the same year, in the first month, on the same day, all of them come out. So we haven't seen this, of course, three people or three powerful men coming from three different places, all at the same time. And they come, and of course, Sufyani is the devil, and the other two are good people. And best of them are the Yamani. Now, these three are all regarded to be, Khurasani and Sufyani are regarded to be two sides. Yamani is mentioned, by the way, and the fifth very definitive sign is that a man who's called An-Nafsu Zakiyya, the pure soul, will be killed inside Masjid al-Haram by the enemies of the Shia. This man is a very pure soul. He's killed there, his blood is spilt beside Kaaba, and then 15 days after that would be the advent of the Imam. Imam comes out. 15 days, this is what the hadith says. All right. All these do not concern us. Why should we worry about these things? These things are going to happen. Whether we know that, for example, is this event which is happening now, can we actually say that it is one of these things? It doesn't concern us. What concerns us more and most is the general signs which happen in the world, and we are unaware of it. These particular signs, we cannot actually grasp whether an event could be adjusted to one of these. But the general signs, we can have a better understanding of them. And it's the general signs which help us to prepare ourselves for the reappearance of the Imam, not these. These are just things which will happen before or at the time of his reappearance. What should concern us is that those general signs which take place should alarm us that we have to do something. The reappearance is close. Now, first of all, let us talk about this. يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا بَعْدَمَا مُلَأَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجَوْرًا. After the earth is filled with injustice and inequity. How much zulm should happen? I mean, in the past century and the century, a couple of centuries before that, we have seen the type of oppression in the world which was unprecedented. The colonial powers, as soon as Europe found itself having strong navy, they attacked everywhere in the world. They killed everyone in the world. They enslaved people from other parts of the world, isn't it? This is what they did. As soon as they found a strong navy, they just claimed the whole world for themselves. We know about America, for example, Spain, France, Portugal, and England. At that time, it wasn't called, I think, Great Britain. They were fighting each other, saying that this land belonged to us. And then not only fighting each other, killing the indigenous people there as well. So, and then as soon as they could find a way to go to Africa and attack people and just enslave innocent people walking in their villages, just take them and bring them and enslave them and kill others. And, well, this is great injustice, isn't this great oppression? In the last century, in the two world wars, how many million people, 60 million people or more, were killed? I mean, this is great oppression. How much oppression, how much zulm should come that we say that this is now the time of the Imam to come? Now, let me read you a hadith, and then you judge for yourself. Maybe we are taking the meaning of injustice wrongly. It doesn't mean killing. It doesn't mean bloodshed. It doesn't mean plundering. Because all these, I think, the extreme of all these have been perpetrated by Europe in the past couple of centuries. So, what is the meaning of this? Now, let me read this hadith. This hadith is very authentic in the sense that in the Shi'i books, it's mentioned in Tahzib Shaykh al-Tusi, which is one of the most credible books. In the Sunni books, it's mentioned in Musnad Abu Ya'li, another very credible book in the Sunni world. So both Sunni and Shia have reported this hadith. قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم كيف بكم إذا فسدت نساؤكم وفسق شبابكم ولم تأمروا بالمعروف ولم تنهوا عن المنكر. How will you do, what will you do when your women go corrupt, your children, your youth go out of faith, and you do not command good and you do not forbid evil? What will you do? The companions of the Prophet said, وَيَكُونُ ذَلَكَ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. This will happen. He said, قَالَ نَعَمْ وَشَرٌ مِنْ ذَلَكَ. Yes, it will happen, and even worse. Worse than this. He said, كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا أَمَرْتُمْ بِالْمُنْكَرْ وَنَحَيْتُمْ عَنِ الْمَعْرُوفِ. What will you do when there will come a time, talking about Muslim Ummah, not others, about Muslim Ummah, that you will command evil and forbid good. Wow, Muslim Ummah will do that. They said, وَيَكُونُ ذَلَكْ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. Will this happen? قَالَ نَعَمْ وَشَرٌ مِّنْ ذَلَكْ. Even worse than that. What's worse than that? Commanding evil, forbidding good. What's worse than that? كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا رَأَيْتُمُ الْمَعْرُوفَ مُنْكَرًا وَالْمُنْكَرَ مَعْرُوفًا. You see the good as evil and see the evil as good. When this happens, that's the end of humanity, human race. When evil happens, if we have that, those good values, we may try to stop it, okay? But if we see good as evil and evil as good, we promote it. When our values are misplaced, when our values are shifted, then of course, we are actually in a sort of abyss of perdition. There's no way out of it. And this is one of the ahadith which is mentioned about Akhir al-Zaman, the time of Mahdi alayhi salam. When the values are displaced, not only among non-Muslims, but Muslims as well. Now we are trying the most obscene values which never humanity would have accepted in the past are being promoted as human rights. And we are trying to adjust our Quran to it. This is Akhir al-Zaman, isn't it? This is when things have changed. This is when we see Ma'ruf as Munkar. And what can we do? What can we do here? This is when the earth is filled with oppression. Yesterday I read that United States sanctioned Uganda for the laws against homosexuality. Homosexuality is now a human right. Something which will always be a human disgrace is now becoming a human right. Look about the situation of relation of man and woman. Fornication, which has always been something looked as an indecency, is now a human right. And the powers are trying to enforce it everywhere in the world. Isn't this the time for Mahdi to come? Now, of course, no one can actually put any date for the reappearance of Mahdi alayhi salam. However, if we are somehow polluted by this value misplacement, then when Mahdi comes, in which camp will we be? That's the main question. To prepare ourselves for the coming of Mahdi alayhi salam is not to go and learn how to fight or to improve our martial arts and such things. He doesn't need this. To prepare is to prepare ourselves that in a way that when he comes, we can find ourselves in his camp, not in the opposite camp. Now, if our values are these misplaced values that the Prophet says, رَأَيْتُمُ الْمَعْرُوفَ مُنْكَرًا وَالْمُنْكَرَ مَعْرُوفًا, you see good as evil, you see evil as good, then what will happen? When he comes, of course, he brings the values which Allah has commanded him, the values of the Prophet, the values of Ayyam alayhi salam, and then we say, no, it couldn't be right. He's not talking sense. These are against whatever we believe. Although we are Muslims, although we are Shia, however, his values would not meet our values. Then, of course, we are going to reject him the same way as other nations did with their own promised prophets and people, the same way. So, how can we prepare ourselves? How can we protect ourselves from misplacement of these values? It's very simple. The Prophet, peace be on him, said, I leave behind two precious things, Kitab Allah wa Itrati. They never part until the Day of Judgment. Mahdi's values are Quranic values. Quranic values are Mahdi's values. If we want to prepare for his coming, we have to somehow adjust our values with the Quran. It's the only way. The only way. If we adjust our values with the Quran, then when he comes, because he speaks the Quran, because he wants to establish the values of the Quran, then we approve, we confirm, our heart is at peace with him. If otherwise, we are trying to impose the modern values on the Quran, the modern way of life on the Quran, and say that, well, Muslims are not all fundamentalists and traditional. No, we have some modern Muslims who accept homosexuality. Wow. If this is what we are doing, if we are changing the Quranic values, then of course when he comes, we cannot stand in his camp. We would go to the opposite camp. Fundamentalism is a term given to variety of people. Those who, the terrorists are called fundamentalists. And recently, this is very interesting, in Britain, one of the ministers said that those who pray five times a day are extremists. I mean, you can imagine what is the meaning of extremism now. The ISIS is an extremist. Those who pray five times a day are extremists. What is a good Muslim? Who is not extremist, who is not fundamentalist, a Muslim who does not pray, who does not recite the Quran, just is Muslim by birth. This is a good Muslim. Anyhow, sorry, I talked too much. The point I want to make is that to prepare, we shouldn't be concerned about when Mahdi will become. We will come. When he will be coming, that's to Allah. Just like we shouldn't be concerned when we die. We don't know. Maybe we die tomorrow, maybe we die 10 years later or 100 years later. The good thing is that, the important thing is that we have to live good. So the important thing about Mahdi alayhi salam is that we have to be ready for his coming every day. At all stages of our life, we have to be ready for him. And being ready has only one course of action, trying to adjust our values with the values of the Quran. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi
ta'ala. You mentioned about the five signs, but what's the role of the Dajjal? Is it a person or is it a system? Because sometimes I hear different things. And the second question is that some people say that when Imam Zaman actually reappears and, you know, the battles, you know, that there's wars away which battles are fought, that it'll be without modern technology.
What I wanted to say is how, I mean, what concerns me really is how can we take what we learn inside centers like this and spread it outside? Because what I see when I've been coming here for almost a year now, and it's like lecture after lecture, same people, which is just us, come, watch, listen, and go. And I don't see a lot of interaction with like other people. It's either because, I don't know, a lot of the Muslims are not going out there or interacting within, the, let's say, the corporate sector, or like bringing people in the centers. So I think this is the biggest challenge, which is why people have this perception when they say Muslim, they just have this idea of a bearded guy who's got these crazy ideas, whereas not many people really understand who the followers of the 12 Imams are. And so this is, I think, the biggest challenge, and we should sort of, I mean, I don't know what to do about it. Like, I'm always thinking myself, how can we take what we learn here outside and share it with people? I mean, there's a lot of young people who come here, and it's just like, you know, it's like a group of people who come, watch, listen, and go. But there's nothing that's happening from our part, which is, I think, wrong. And you scholars are great, you know, to go and ask questions. But I think, I mean, what do you have to say on that? Like, is this something which is kind of a problem from our side? Are we just like dummies who are just listening and not really taking any practical actions in terms of changing people's perception and telling them, like, look, there is a difference. I mean, this is who we are. And you haven't really heard the whole side of Islam. What you've heard is only what the media is telling you or what some you know, crazy Muslims are telling you. I mean, this is what it really bothers me. I think this is the biggest problem. And how do you think we can overcome such a challenge?
It is effective. I mean, if by educating ourselves we can somehow remove some of the superstitions about things, if we can educate some of our friends, explain to them. However, our power never can be like the power of the media. They can do whatever they want. They can, today, they can say ISIS is a terrorist. Tomorrow, they say it is a Sunni insurgency. The next day, they may say they are revolutionaries, you see, depending on their politics. And no one can actually, with the type of power that these media have, no one can stand and say, no, you are wrong. Yesterday you were saying this thing, tomorrow you are saying that thing. I think for us Muslims, it's very important to somehow penetrate into the media. Not penetrating in the sense that penetrate there and become like a spy or someone who is a stranger. No, we have to use whatever capacity we have in terms of spreading the word by any means. Is it whether it's videos, it's DVDs, it's broadcast or whatever, we have to do that. However, of course, our power is limited now. Maybe inshallah in future this power would increase. The know-how, the technology would be better. But we have to bear in mind, just compare what happened, for example, at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, okay? When he was martyred in Kufa, people in Sham, in Syria, were told that Ali was killed, and they, of course, celebrated a lot. And then they asked each other, how was he killed? And they were told that he was killed in the mosque while praying. And they were surprised. They said, did Ali pray at all? Did he go to mosque? If he went to mosque, if he used to go to mosque, why did he fight him? You see, the sort of propaganda machine was so strong that everyone felt Ali was a real kafir. Now, this will go on. I mean, Muslims, unfortunately, somehow leave things to God. We shouldn't do that. We have to be very clever. We have to, of course, try to do our best. However, if we exert our utmost effort, then we can be satisfied that we have tried our best, even if we haven't, of course, reached the desired results.
I see where the sister is coming from in terms of, let's say, maybe some types of buildings whose architecture, for example, might not proclaim religion and therefore could attract the non-religious. It's kind of sneaky, but I can see that. But I think we should also remember the power of the presence of apparently religious things, the appearance of the religious in society. Take, for example, the hijab, okay? One power of the hijab is because its appearance by itself challenges the insistence that secularism wants to claim the entire social environment. And this is why they hate hijab so much. I also would like you to look at when you are traveling about in London or in England, and we see churches, even though they might be abandoned, what does that building bring to mind? And not just the building being in the service of religion, the construction of it, the stones that are used to make it, you know, they stand out as, you know, sentinels of a certain power, okay, that no bank or no shard or nothing like that could compare to these
beautiful structures that remain standing that remind British people of where they come from, you see? We must remember that religion is a complete thing. You know, and art, religious art, is a very important component of religion. You know, and one aspect of religious art is in the architectural design and construction of buildings of particular faiths. And so you could even almost, identify a faith by virtue of looking at a building. You could know if this is a Buddhist building, if it's a Hindu building, if it is a mosque, if it's a church. You know it by the design. And this is not something, I don't believe this is something that came up by people dreaming about it. This is something I think that came about by Ilham, you see? And it is very important that we also, one time you could construct, community centers and so on, you know, on another level, I think it is also very important that we construct masajid, or we decorate our places of worship in such a way so as to give that back to the environment in which we live.